that it's prime time for M&A, as we've already seen the first half of this year. What are these existing producers, what are these acquirers actually looking for? People don't want to buy ounces for the sake of ounces. They want ounces with a profitable margin.
But the thing that we do as bankers, mate, is we throw some darts at the dartboard and have a punt at some potential deals.
And this is what I've been waiting for. Predictions, because there is a chance I'll come true. Yeah. I like throwing the darts when you know where the dartboard is already.
I've got a few ideas. Some of them a bit left field, but I think in this market, there is some serious value plays that would be too good not to consider.
Money Miners, welcome to Thursday, 17th of August. And, well, JD is not here, but we decided to fill the void, Trav.
Hey, mate.
Oh, how exciting. We have a very special, highly qualified intern, you'd say.
Oh,
decided to join us.
Doesn't do it justice. We've actually upgraded JD into a much smarter and much more capable colleague for the day.
Bit bloody arse, don't work. We would like to introduce not the Ali G, but we have from ex-Argonaut fame on a bit of a hiatus in life and has decided to come join the Money of Mine team. Ali, welcome to the crew, legend.
No, good day, boys. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for gracing us with your presence and also with the limoncello that we just had. That was divine.
So Ali's got a rule that she doesn't do any public speaking without getting on the piss before. So it was one shot of limoncello, bit of homebrew, bit of lemon rocket fuel.
Just to take the edge off.
And I thought we'd partake ourselves, Ricciardo.
Oh, I thought so too. And for context for the Money Miners, JD and I both started our careers at Argonaut. Ali worked in the corporate finance team there with me for a couple of years, and she when I joined Maddie, I knew absolutely fucking nothing. Ali was the person that made my work not shit before it would be reviewed from a director.
Good work, Al.
So a strong history of making me look smarter, and I hope she continues that trend by joining us on the podcast today, mate.
No worries.
And we're pretty stoked to have her here.
Mate, and she's put in the bloody hard yards for the episode too. She might be a long one because she's made up for all the lack of research I do.
Yeah.
But right.
And also, just on that too, and bloody congratulations, Al, for taking a career break. I think, you know, in our profession, a lot of people don't think that's an option, but it is. And
absolutely.
And I think it's a pretty courageous thing to do. So good on you.
No, thank you. And
a job of low pay here for you, Al, if you
that's right. Join, mate. Well, it's about the hardest I've worked in the last 3 months, so it's good.
Right, a big show today, guys and girls. We've got a bit of info on the Delta cross trade. MinRes being confirmed, but we'll get into that. We've got capital raising galore. We've got the Liontown contract being awarded, the big infamous underground one. Al, you're going to go into a bit of Mika.
Bit of Mika.
And look, it's a bloody exciting episode. Can't wait. Right, before we get into it, the partners. And now talk about being pertinent to our guest today. JP Search. JP Search. Corporate recruiting, you'd say.
Yes.
Recruiting the high flies, the people that drive the finance industry. Now, JP Search.
Xavier, Michael.
We are hocking out our host on Money of Mine today. We'd like to introduce to Ali, everyone, bulk amounts of investment banking and equity research experience, and look, an absolute treasure you would want in your organisation. Now, look, she is available for employment at the moment. Now, JP Search, we would like to propose possibly a little ticket clipping if this is successful, in addition to the partnership fee that you do pay us. I think that would be fair, wouldn't it, Trav?
If anyone can find a job for Ali, it'd be Xavier and Michael. The only issue might be Ali is too good for everywhere, mate. So genuine credibility.
There's a bit of you'd say, takeover premium attached to her.
Bit of takeover premium.
I see Ali as the Capricorn of the finance industry. She trades at a premium. Righto. Cheers, JP Search, for your partnerships, and call me directly if you would like to employ Ali.
Clip that ticket.
Clip that ticket. Righto, Money Miners. Here we go. First up, MinRes are confirmed as the buyer of the Delta Lithium shares, the big cross trade that happened at the end of the day the other day.
Yeah.
Now, what was it, 11% of the company?
They were, yeah, and we can see now in their, you know, the announcement on the ASX that MinRes now have a 14.24% interest in Delta. So, I mean, you know, we thankfully got that one right and don't have to apologise for getting something wrong on that one, Maddie. But I did see this tweet up from Chucky and it piqued my interest. He said 11.5% of Delta crosses 2 weeks before shareholders ratify Idemitsu placement and approve KMP termination benefits. So there's a shareholder meeting in 2 weeks' time and shareholders are voting on the ratification of the shares issued to Idemitsu and some, you know, some key management personnel benefits. The question I had reading that was, what does it mean if MinRes voted to against ratifying the shares to Idemitsu? And who better to ask, mate, than Ali, because she has done her fair share of equity transactions in a call. So I actually said to Ali this morning, like, would MinRes actually have any strategic interest in blocking the ratification of shares issued to Delta?
What the fuck's the go, Ali? Like,
so ratification basically means that they're essentially approving to reset the listing rule 7.1 placement capacity. And I don't think it would be in MinRes's interest to prevent that from happening, because it essentially reduces the ability for Delta to quite simply and easily raise money. So for me, I think it's coincidental that this is around the same time, but I don't believe there's any strategic intent behind
it. So Chucky's barking up the wrong tree. Sorry, Chucky. Nothing to see here, mate.
Jeez, that limoncello did wonders, Ali. That was a sensational first execution on the news. Right, stay tuned. Obviously a bit more happening in this. Delta's definitely been in the news after their little high share price fall for Diggers. Now it went back up and it's all over the shop. So plenty happening in the Flano quarters. Right, Core Lithium. Well, $100 million fully underwritten placement plus a $20 million share purchase plan at 40 cents per share to fund growing funding growing pains at Finis.
You could read out the real use of funds that they quote, but I think when a developer having a bit of ramp up issues raising money, you always just look at that use of funds with a bit of a sort of experience. You never quite really believe what the use of funds is on those sort of equity raises.
26% discount to the last close, 30% discount to VWAPs, which is 30% just seems to be the norm for cap raise discounts in this current equity market, it appears.
Maybe just because all the people raising money because they're fucking up.
Well, let's read into it. They are in production. They obviously had a poor recovery last quarter due to the increased amount of fines, because they're a DMS circuit only. They do not have a flotation part to their mill. Why would they need $100 million now that they're in production and already have cash on the balance sheet?
Yeah, I think this is – it's just a – like we could go down a rabbit hole talking about Core. We kind of have before. I don't really want to rehab the conversation. It's like the I just think they fit the broader theme at the moment of troubled equity raisings, and you know this is like case in point one to point two that speaks to it. It's like they, you know, you could see in the numbers that they came out with before this equity raise that they were ultimately saying that their OPEX was way higher because they were having to, you know, all the haulage associated with their the fines that they had to transport that back, that wasn't factored in. It's the epitome of understudied. Like the study was not done to the standard that, you know, a lot of people would have liked to see an asset go into production, and now they're really, you know, paying the price for that by way of trying to be fast to market, but maybe not doing things as thoroughly as they should have been done before you get to market, because then you have to bloody do the studying while you're producing, and that's a very costly exercise, Maddie.
And I think we couldn't, because you think of, okay, are they going to put, is this money going to be put towards a flotation circuit on the back end to try and increase their recovery and to deal with these fines? But look, a couple of people I've spoken to is that Core doesn't know if putting the flotation circuit on the back end is the solution. They were looking at changing grate sizes because it seems like the speed to market that Core was trying for, they got to market quickly, but it possibly was at the detriment of fully understanding the metallurgy, fully understanding the ore body of where this fines distribution is. So it doesn't, and $100 million wouldn't build a flotation circuit, I don't think. I'd say it might be a bit more than that, possibly.
Yeah.
So, right, now they mentioned that there's the Tesla thing as well, Trav.
Yeah.
Potential, baked into page. Potential legal claim.
Page 18 of the Investor Press today, Core Lithium disclosed that it's received correspondence from Tesla in relation to the binding term sheet that otherwise expired on October 2022, that it intends to avail itself of all available legal remedies to the extent the parties are unable to mutually resolve this matter without litigation. So make of that what you will. We'll flash that one up on the screen for people to interpret as they choose.
Right, a few other equity raises.
Yeah.
Floating around.
There are.
Especially in the nickel world.
Yeah, I think we'll group them together because some of these we didn't talk about when they happened because we were too pissed at diggers.
We were.
But you saw, like, in the last few weeks, you've seen Centaurus raise $47 million, Lunnon raise $18 million, Poseidon raise $6 million. And what do all of those companies have in common? They're all nickel developers raising money at, you know, either at 12-month lows or very close to 12-month lows, which is, yeah, an interesting position to be in. And in some cases they're a big quantum. And when you're raising a big quantum at a you know, low relative share price, are you doing that because you have a negative outlook for where things are going in the nickel price into the future and you're trying to, you know, have decent reserves before that happens? I don't know. I don't know what to read of that one, Maddie, but just another thing to notice there.
So, and 29, we'll go into 29 a bit, Trav, because there was that AFR article that said they were going to raise and now that article's been withdrawn.
This
from
was
the AFR off Street Talk. Very odd.
Super fascinating, mate. Yeah, yesterday afternoon, AFR published an article saying 29 Metals were, you know, sounding out funds to raise money. That article was taken down a few hours later. The reports in the AFR were that 29 Metals were raising $100 million at 40 cents per share. Now, today, 29 Metals are actually trading today and the stock's down 4%. And so after market open, they actually come out with an announcement, a one-page release saying that the article incorrectly suggested brokers were sounding fund managers for an equity raise. I find it really intriguing that 29 Metals point to the similarity in that article to a previous article from Street Talk on the same day. Now, mate, we just mentioned Core Lithium raises some money, $100 million at 40 cents per share. So there's some analogies to the equity raise. But when I read that Street Talk article about 29 Metals, it didn't appear like it was written as an accident. There was some very, you know, detailed references to EMR and a whole bunch of stuff. Like it was, I think this one page announcement out from 29 Metals is painting it to look like it was accidentally written with their title, but you know, that article was absolutely written about 29 Metals. Whether it was written accurately or not, I don't know. But we on the money at my team, we've absolutely made the case that we think they have a funding shortfall which needs to be addressed.
Well, as you said, it's going to look pretty silly if they retract it and then end up raising money next week.
Yeah.
So, right, Burncut get the underground contract at Kathleen Valley. God, talk about a very talked about underground contract. Maybe that was just me talking about it. But look, it was, it's been in the news for a while because it's one of the biggest underground mining contracts in Australia. So it's a $1 billion contract over 4 years. So that $1 billion is essentially what Burncut will invoice Limetown. So that's a $1 billion over 4 years. And that is at the higher end.
You called this, Matty. The Burncut getting the contract?
Yeah, oh, I don't know if I explicit. I actually re-listened to my snippet from the previous episode. I didn't explicitly say it, but I did say it would be between them and Barminco as bigger contracts to take on something this size. And purely for the reason, because it says in the announcement that Burncut will commit $125 million for new plant and equipment. That's over that four-year period. So that's $125 million of, you'd say, CapEx that Burncut have to put in to supply that contract. So it's sort of like a mining company building a small mill. So it's a big commitment. So
yeah, right.
Oh, because you'd put it in similarities to Burncut's contracts at sort of Carrapateena and Prominent Hill, that sort of size. I think that's about around the size. Like, it's a big, big contract, lots of tons, lots of jumbos on the higher end of what we see in Australian underground mining. So,
do you think it's good news for Burncut or bad news that they win that contract?
Oh, great news for them. Great news? Yeah, great news. Especially if they execute on it. Oh, it's obviously, I don't know how the contract's set up and who takes on a lot of the risk if things don't perform, but they are the company that for the job, very professional establishment.
It does pose the question about what are the funding dynamics for Liontown though, doesn't it?
Yes, very much so, because I've got a bit to go through here, but I'll fast forward to that bit specifically, Trav, because we did see some comments from Jarden, our great friends at Jarden. I'll tell you what, Johnny Bishop and Benny Lyons, like, I'm just letting you know, lads, I'm looking into the camera, you pass my bromance filters. Absolute GCs.
You've got to stop saying our good friends, because people confuse friends of the pod with actual foes of the pod. Oh, so we can't say friends for actual friends.
We've
got to reserve friends for not friends.
Yes, well, okay, so looking at a bit of their research and their model that they've put in, so... So in the 2021 DFS, the unit cost per ton was at $45 a ton. So that's the operating cost. That doesn't include any sustaining capital. And Jarden's underground unit cost assumptions, they've been lifted from their previous. They had it at $100 a ton, and now it's gone up to $130 a ton based on this contract value. But that includes sustaining capital. It hasn't been split out. So I think they anticipate that once the sustaining capital gets split out, it might drop back to $100. So, and we saw a lot of commentary from Bill in Develops Quarterly talking about the increased scope over time. So, look, with the funding gap, because predicted about $350 million at the moment.
There are various estimates out there. And keep in mind when Liontown was, like, I think number one or number two most shorted stocks on the ASX, that was people predicting the funding gap there. Yep. And they ended up getting bloody squeezed, those shorts, when the bids were revealed from Albemarle.
Well, they're back down to $2.50 today, I think.
Yeah.
Look, Canaccord have predicted that 90 mil pre-tax cash flow is going to come from the DSO. So definitely the DSO is definitely not going to cover the funding gap. So you'd look at the increased scope, and I'm going to go through it all. So the increased scope and the increased unit operating cost to get all the dirt out and get all the meters, that is going to chew into the working capital and that CapEx shortfall. So you can anticipate that it is possibly going to be more than 350, excluding the DSO. Yeah. So the run rate's been another interesting one. So let's look at their 2021 DFS. You can look at it here. They were going to reach the 4 million tonne run rate about 2029. So... looking at their latest presentation, it says, you know, they've got two separate mining areas, 2 million tonne per annum each. As I said, Bill's comments about the increasing scope, and look, what I've heard is that 4 million tonne per annum run rate is being pulled forward significantly. It's not going to be 2029. It's going to be much sooner. So they're starting at 3 million tonne. So look, you can just see how it's all... how much the scope's increased since that 2021 DFS. So whether it's 3 million tonne or 4 million tonne, that's a big operation that is purely reliant on diesel haulage fleets. So you can then, it's going to need about like 20 trucks in an underground mine. So, and with this electrification thing, I'd be anticipating that they'd have to be looking at alternative haulage strategies that can utilise electricity, because you can't use electric trucks going up a decline, just choose the shit out of the battery.
Mate, you've chucked in a photo of a bloody monorail here, and I'm having flashbacks to the bloody Simpsons, I tell you.
It looks like the old monorail that used to go around Darling Harbour.
Oh, so, what is going on here?
Yeah, looking at a bit of reading, it appears Canada is like running a bit ahead of Australia in terms of like electric haulage of material. So check out these bloody setups. So these are like electric bloody monorails and electric locomotive sort of setups. So...
yeah.
You can see one that's an underground mine, underground one there. There's another electric conveyor system. So whether they're going to actually look at sort of going down the road of setting something like that up, because, you know, 20 trucks requires 20 people each day to drive those trucks. So there's, you know, a lot of – that's potentially 60 to 70 truck drivers across the whole crew on a two-on-one roster. And you're using a lot of diesel and a lot of very reliant on people. People make mistakes. You can't rely on them, because if they bloody go on a bender on break, they won't turn up to work. That doesn't happen with locomotives. Mm. So, yes, we've talked about the funding gap, but I guess I want to touch on what are we going to see on ramp up here, because this is a big, big operation. So there is a shitload of people working extremely hard to get this all happening. There's so many moving parts. Mm.
There's a lot more people that need to be hired in the process as well, right? So they'll be.
Well, I think it's about 600 or 700 people would Burncut will need to supply that contract.
That's enormous. That's a massive hiring effort.
Yes, a lot. And it's going to, that pinches people from other operations. You take the risk of getting newer people, less experienced people, and there's a lot of high physicals that they're going to have to achieve. So look, the risks for this ramp up. First up, you got the jumbo development. So remember, Kathleen Valley is right next door to Bellevue. So we know Bellevue, it's very publicised that they experience very hard ground conditions. And now we chuck spodumene in the mix as well. So because hard ground, that gives you the slow drilling penetration. It's tough on consumables, slows the development. They've got a lot of development to achieve. I think it's like 7 to 9 jumbos. And then you put spodumene in once they get into the ore body. Spodumene is extremely abrasive. We talked about that at the Pilgangoora trip, Trav. So, look, it's quicker to drill through, but very high wear on the drill bits and the consumables. So you're always stopping, changing bits. That's the first part of the puzzle, is getting the development in. Then you've got the haulage. So as I said, pulling 3 to 4 million tonne out via diesel haulage. Big job, lots of congestion underground. You're getting a lot less efficiency for every extra truck you add on. If I go down the road of, look, the electric locomotives or rail systems, or to try and implement that in parallel with maintaining all the dirt coming out, it's hard to concurrently conduct those activities.
Yeah.
Then the mill. So Pilgangoora, they talked about, took them about, 18 months to sort of fine-tune their mill to get their recoveries.
Just optimization.
Yeah. Optimizing and to get it to where it is. So Kathleen Valley has a pace plan on the back of theirs to feed the underground. Pilgangoora don't. It's an open pit. They don't need it. So it's an extra stage of the process. You have to have the mill running smoothly to produce the tailings, to then feed the pace plant, to then backfill the underground stopes, to then bring on the next stope to provide ore to feed the mill. Then, mate, it's just a big bloody circle that goes around. You take one chain out, Trav and Ali, she's a bloody big ball of fuck. That's all it is.
There's a lot of moving parts.
As I said, there's a lot of people working extremely hard to execute this. Don't want to take anything away from anyone that's doing it, because it is a massive, massive job. So would you say, let's look at the Albemarle bid. There was talks of Gina getting involved. God, there was BHP got a mention in the paper the other day. Are they going to look at it, because it's just down the road from Mount Keith, to try and get possible extra nickel land to explore? Do you reckon they're just going to sit on their hands and wait for potential ramp-up issues and maybe possibly lob a bid if the value of Liontown goes down? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's if they let it get to ramp up. I think there's like a view that if this funding gap, which the brokers are pointing to, is real, then sometimes you'll see a bit of a sell-off anticipating that, just, given the hedgy dynamic that we talked about in the past. So, you know, if you see the share price come off a bit, would any of those parties be opportunistic in that context? And or would, you know, because you don't have to wait for ramp up issues to lob a bid, maybe you can just wait for a share price to come off in anticipation of a funding gap.
What's your thoughts, Al?
And I think in this market the funding gap's going to happen, right? And if for some reason that it doesn't, there'll most likely be ramp up issues. It's just been an issue that's been prevalent across the market, across commodities. So I think there'll either be one, if not two, points in time where one of these majors can come in and grab it.
It's going to be very interesting. But why do you think they've waited? Are they waiting for a bid so they don't have to worry about filling the funding gap? Al, is that what you reckon?
Potentially. It's easier. Get someone else to do the hard yards and then pick it up.
Yeah. Good stuff. Oh, geez, I need a bloody breath after that. Maddie's back. Righto. Next up, WA Gold Sector M&A. I have a feeling, is this where Ali's taking the bull by the horns here?
Absolutely. I've missed my banking days too much.
Oh, mate, we're happy to fill the void for you, mate, and get you a job. JP Search.
Fabulous.
What's the goss, Al? What's the word on the decline, mate?
Well, I mean, there's been a fair amount of activity this year. And I mean, now that we're at the sort of past the halfway mark, Diggers and Dealers has come and gone, I think it's a good time to sort of reflect on, well, what is actually the landscape here? And particularly looking at those undeveloped assets, so advanced explorers and developers. So
you had a look at all of the deals that have happened this year in that space, and what did you pick up there, Al?
And did you tell us which ones you predicted, Al?
Well, didn't predict any of these ones, but there has been a few. I mean, there's been a Mr. Rivera's Brightstone King West merger, the Catalyst acquiring Vango and Superior, Pantoro and Tulla, finally Norseman has been consolidated.
Well, back to Brightstone and King West, you'd never predict that. They're not even bloody close, either ends of the country, pretty much.
Literally. And then you've got the Battle of Leonora that ultimately saw Genesis acquire those St. Barbara Leonora assets.
Did we talk about that?
No.
Not too much.
First time today.
You'd have to refresh me on that one.
And then, of course, you've got the ever-active Ramelius acquiring both Breaker and and Musgrave as well, which is still in progress within a couple of months.
Yeah.
So
37% today, I think, 37.3 or something.
Yeah, so over a third of the way there. Mm. So, and there's a fair bit of themes going on at the minute. I mean, the big end of town, Trav, what's going on there?
Yeah, and it's a good question to ask, right? Like, what are the themes driving some of the activity? I try and zoom out as much as possible, and then you'll zoom into the WA space, which is a bit more relevant. But if I zoom out to the mega miners, I think you see the large gold majors trying to increase their exposure to the premium jurisdictions, and they're decreasing their exposure to the non-premium jurisdictions, i.e. Africa. Like, look at B2 Gold, right? Everyone thinks of B2 Gold as an African miner. They've got assets in other sort of, high-risk jurisdictions as well, but they've just marked their entry into Canada via a $1 billion takeover of Sabina. And even Kinross, another one that, fits the same sort of category of being high-risk jurisdiction, gold miner. They spent $2 billion, buying Great Bear in Canada as well. So the other theme too that I think you notice a lot in that high-end or the large producing space is gold companies are buying copper assets and copper companies now. Like Barrick bid First Quantum. That's insane. The second largest gold miner in the world bidding First Quantum. And that just meets that theme of, Newmont, they've been doing this for ages. They've got copper exposure. Harmony Gold bought Eva Copper Project in Queensland not that long ago. Newcrest for a long time have had these copper credits as part of their portfolio too.
The Emerald, they got to get an Australia exposure now too, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
On a smaller scale.
Yeah, not a copper one there, but they do fit the category of, trying to go longer on the premium jurisdictions and shorter on the not-so-premium jurisdictions. And then you had a look at the themes as they relate to the WA, in particular gold space, Ali. What do you pick up when you look there?
Yeah, so I mean, after sort of knocking out a few in that category, there seems to be a real scarcity of quality undeveloped gold projects in WA. And my Googling seemed to identify only 17 that are listed on the ASX that are single asset companies that have over 1 million ounce gold resource, and not necessarily all of them are that great.
Hang on, you use Google to scroll? I know.
I don't have my S&T login.
I've not FactSet or S&P anymore, Al.
It's terrible. And then the other thing you got going on is that gold developer valuations are trading at the absolute low. I mean, particularly with interest rates and inflation blowing out CapEx budgets and things like that. And that's meant that there's been a serious disparity between capital available for developers compared to producers. So It's very hard now, as we've seen echoed by a lot of people you've interviewed as well, that getting money for juniors is hard and probably getting harder. The time and cost to build new resources has increased significantly in the last 2 years, and there's been an extremely poor track record of developers ramping up into production, which has really hampered investor sentiment, particularly on the equity side. Mm. So you
see everyone wanted that re-rate that comes as you advance
coming into production,
but they just got bloody torched instead.
They're getting a D-rate.
getting the production D-rate. Yeah. And then so you've got all these investors flocking to producers, and so the equity raisings for gold companies just absolutely come off versus producers who are making heaps of bank at a perhaps all-time high gold price and just building war chests.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fascinating dynamic, right? And the other ones that I sort of thought of when I was looking at the local space was the producers – like, you know, the mid-tier producers, their reserves life of their current assets are getting shorter and shorter as in some cases, they're just processing stockpiles and they're not investing in capital because it's a cash flow thing. They need to be demonstrating positive cash flow to shareholders, and the way you do that is reduce spend on capital, process stockpiles. So lower reserves life, and that's led to, I think, a bit more of a trend to increase reserves life by buying instead of drilling. And the other theme is there's a little bit of mill underutilization, I think, which in some cases, or it's not optimized, the mill's not optimized, it might be processing lower grade ounces, which could be displaced if you had more consolidation.
And we talked about there's too many bloody mills in the Murchison, pretty much. At the moment,
way too many. So I mean, not enough gold. But so really, for existing producers, it's prime time for M&A, as we've already seen the first half of this year. And so, what are these existing producers? What are these acquirers actually looking for? And I think, like Jake Klein and Wayne Bramwell pointed out last week, people don't want to buy ounces for the sake of ounces. They want ounces with a profitable margin. And so in my mind, the key attributes for that is scale, grade, and compatibility with existing productions.
Yeah.
And that has some implications around hubs as well. So
it sounds like I can picture the investment banking slide right now as you go and pitch them. These are the three categories, and we put a bloody little Harvey
can you
ball.
Tell?
And we'll rate them on each.
So we're traffic lights.
Because it's all, I guess, and you talk about hubs. I guess, how about we go through the WA hubs? Australian ones, most of these are WA.
Because I think that's the implication, right, is you see, you know, based on what Ali said there, the implication is more consolidation in this space, and that leads to the formation of these regional hubs. We saw that with Leonora. That's the plan that Genesis has, is consolidate Leonora. We're seeing that evolve in Murchison. We've talked about that a fair bit. I think we've seen that in Norseman as well, as finally the two joint venture partners have come together. I think the other hubs that, you know, to keep an eye on is there going to be consolidation of the Laverton hub, the Southern Cross hub, and the Sandstone hub as well? And there might be more. We're just sort of casting a broad brush here, but I just think that formation of regional hubs is going to be a, you know, big theme that we see more and more of as consolidation evolves.
Who do you reckon's got the most to play out of those hubs? I think I'd say like Murchison has a lot to play out in that region of how between Ramelius, Westgold, you've got Ramelius going for Musgrave, you've got Gascoigne there, you've got the smaller end of Great Boulder and Meeker, which you're going to go into as well, Ali. I think there's a lot to play out in that region.
Yeah.
But it's all dependent, and as you said, on the quality of the deposits, Ali, because the M&A is not going to happen if it's not because the Musgrave is not a knockout mine. Like it's not going to be an absolute, like it's going to be, it's thin, it has got high resource grade, but it's not like it's not a Bellevue or anything.
And on that point, Maddie, like Ali, she mentioned she did the screen of all of the undeveloped projects out there in WA. You know, you started by looking at what's gone, and then you looked at what's left. What did you find there, Ali?
Well, like I said earlier, I mean, excluding De Grey, because that's really in another stratosphere here, there's only 16. And some that sort of look interesting to me from an M&A perspective is Ausgold's Katanning project, Gascoigne, Dalgaranga, particularly the growing Never Never prospect there.
You can scrap the Gilbies, just Never Never.
Yeah. And then you got Horizon Gold and Alto in the Sandstone region, and then you also got Maker and, to an extent, even though it's not over a million ounces, but Great Boulder as well. And there's about a dozen others as well that we can mention too. But I think what's interesting to have a look at is the flip side, and who is the most hungry?
Yeah.
But whose mills are the most hungry? Yeah,
and you look at some of those, like Ausgold, Gum Creek and Alto specifically, like they've been sitting there for a long time now.
Yeah. And so you had Carla Winder before Capricorn, you know, took it over. Like, I think that's just the pathway that sometimes happens, right? Yeah.
Are you going to go through the others, any that stand out there? Look, Medallion's another one that's been just hampered by this equity side. It's just the share price has just kept going down because they can't get the investment. My theory was, Ali, now this is, I thought that Barrick was taking over First Quantum just to get access to the infrastructure to take over Medallion, $25 billion company taken out just to get access to Medallion. I thought that was guaranteed.
Made sense to me. And next they'll be bidding for Allkem to get access to the Mount Catlin infrastructure there. That's put it all together.
It's just all just coming together. I'm telling you.
Exactly. I think Ali will get into some of those names of the undeveloped ones. I think that question you pose, Ali, of who's hungry, that's going to inform a lot of the consolidation that we see here, because deals happen from, you know, human factors, and what drives the human emotions is desperation. What drives desperation? Well, sometimes you need to do a deal to keep your job or to meet your expectations of production or to have your bloody performance rights fest or whatever they are.
Some people do a deal and put themselves out of a job.
And I admire the people that do that, you know, because it's contrary to the trend and it's usually in shareholders' interest.
Good for golf.
Yeah. So the you know, who's most hungry? I think, like, there's been evidence that there are certain mid-tier gold producers that are hungry, you know, as shown by their activity in the market already, and they've showed their hand. We speak of Westgold. They showed their hand with their hostile move that they had on Musgrave. Silver Lake similarly showed their hand, you know, with their hostile move on the Leonora asset. So there's two.
That was extremely hungry. Like that was like a week without food. That's bloody hungry. Play.
So I think that those two they're known hungry, and also fitting in that known hungry category, I'm going to lob Genesis. You know, they're now a producer, and they've got this public strategy to consolidate. I just think we'll see them continue to be hungry over time.
I'd say they've filled up a bit. They're not back into fasting just yet.
But maybe intermittent fasting.
They're possibly just on a keto at the moment, but possibly hungry coming up soon.
Yeah. Then I've labelled this next group moderate appetite. And I'm talking Remelius. So
it's like a nutrition chart. I reckon we could convert this into a nutrition chart.
Harvey Bowles, mate. Remelius, they got their hands full for a while, right? I mean, they got like they've just bloody acquired. Well, if Musgrave completes, then they'll have three super recent transactions that they've got to wrap their head around and incorporate into their mind plans. But they just continue to be hungry, so you leave them in moderate appetite. But they will have their hands full for a while, I imagine.
I think the Carosue Dam thing's probably the big thing that's gonna for that Lake Rebecca area. That you'd put them in the next cab off the rank.
Yeah,
possibly
Regis. They don't need another development project. They got McPhillamys, right? So I don't know if they're super hungry, but they do need more free cash flow to fund McPhillamys, I think. So to the extent they're hungry, I think they'll be looking to get their hands on some free cash flow. Gold Road, I mean, these guys are always hungry, right? Because they need to justify their bloody existence instead of just being a non-controlling interest in one mine. Hence, they've lobbed themselves into De Grey, but you know, do they have the capability to build a mine? I don't know. I think they'll just keep trying to hitch themselves to things where they don't have to do much work. Capricorn, I put them in the moderate appetite too, because, you know, they're bringing Mount Gibson online. I think what could drive some deal activity from them is the fact that their current valuation assumes that Mount Gibson, is 100% unrisked. It's sort of like they trade at 1x NAV on an unrisked basis for Mount Gibson, which is pretty astounding. They're kind of, you know, fully valued for that to just go smoothly and on budget and all that sort of stuff. So the way that they can, you know, bust their valuation to the next level is acquire another growth project, and then all of a sudden the brokers can add another mine plan to their valuation, and the share price can go even higher. So that maybe that happens, but you often don't want expectations to exceed reality by too much. Otherwise you disappoint. Emerald is the other one I put there, which you brought up before, Matty. They're going to build that bullseye in that Laverton region there. And I suspect that could be a bit of a play to consolidate the region. I think Ali's going to talk about that a bit later on too.
Buy Mount Morgan's back off Genesis.
Oh, there's a lot in Laverton, right? Not just Mount Morgan's, but yeah. Yeah. And then I think there's another category.
Trav, I'm just reading the notes here.
Oh, I'm not going to say those words, mate.
Really? can you please say them? Because that is hilarious.
No. So this, I call it the other category. Red 5. So I just think these guys, they'll be waiting to be bid by, you know, Genesis instead of being hungry themselves and buying more ounces. They appear to be past the hurdle at King of the Hills, but they obviously are part of the puzzle in the Leonora consolidation story. I'm just going to group Calidus, Pantoro, and Orobanda all together. These are, you know, these are proven to be pretty troubled projects, and they've just got to prove themselves operationally before they have sort of capability to do anything themselves. Dacian, I just think of as pseudo Genesis now, and eventually that will fold in, I imagine. Catalyst is, you know, the latest entrant into the WA gold producer market, and I imagine they've got their hands full with Plutonic Mary Meyer project now, and they've got that Tasmanian mine Henty, but it's a pretty marginal project itself. So I just don't think any of those companies I just mentioned are going to be very hungry at all. Now, to zoom out even more, just to be comprehensive for the money miners, let's talk about Goldfields, right?
I'm interested in these ones.
Yeah. Because there are a few international listed companies who have assets, producing assets in WA, and we often don't have very good insight about these companies because they're listed somewhere else. In the case of Goldfields, I actually think they'll be around here in WA for a while. Like, look on LinkedIn, look for people that work at Goldfields with the title starting with the word chief, the C tier, and most of them are based in Perth.
Yeah, because their corporate is here. Like their tech services, head of tech services and everything is in Perth, not in South Africa.
I think the tricky thing for them though is that a lot of their management got shafted in the aftermath of the failed Yamana deal. But it's, you know, like the clear sort of deal for them would still be to acquire Gold Road if they can move forward there, given they are the other joint venture partner on Gruyere.
And De Grey as well.
De Grey so could
take,
fold into
take Gold Road, then take De Grey. I think I predicted that ages ago. Someone told me, but I'm claiming it as mine.
The other one's Anglo, right? So Anglo, they're currently re-domiciling to the New York Stock Exchange.
What the – Trav, another word I've learned.
Yeah.
Re-domiciling.
Yeah, yeah.
What does that mean?
Just bloody domiciling themselves on that exchange.
They're, just going there.
Yeah, they're dealing – exactly. Right. I mean, not physically, but just the listing, right?
Yeah.
In their case – they've removed their ASX listing already. Ticker AGG doesn't work anymore. And they're removing the JSE, which is the Johannesburg Stock Exchange listing. They're gaining the New York Stock Exchange listing. And this whole process is a costly exercise. I heard numbers in the hundreds of millions of dollars to do this. But what's the rationale of doing it? I think one of the things that it does is it gives them more capability to do deals with their script, because no one wants Johannesburg Stock Exchange listed scrip.
No.
So all of a sudden, if you have NYSE scrip, you know, you've got a lot more firepower to do a deal. And maybe, just maybe, that re-domiciling is because they've got a deal lined up that they're going to do involving their scrip. So I don't know what that is, but that's just my insight there. Greatland Gold, right? They're currently listed. I think it's on the AIM in UK. And I think it's pretty clear that they want to buy Telfer, which the Australian is talking about today, is you know, going to be spat out of Newcrest Newmont when that deal's over. But, you know, as I'll get to a bit later, you know, I sort of think Evolution's going to be looking at that too.
It's just a bit of an inconvenient distance, that, like, the Greatland Gold project to proximity to Telfer. It's just that for a high tonnage, low grade deposit, a little bit too far to truck, but It's like, well, do they build the mill at Greatland to actually support it? Yet to be known, because it's going to be a massive, massive deposit.
Havieron is enormous, it's an utterly enormous,
huge.
Project.
One of the most expensive declines I think ever put in, because it was all like road headers and lots of support, because it was absolute pus apparently to go through.
Yeah. Then to the TSX, you got Karora listed out there, and that company's valued at $800 million now with two WA gold mines. If I was them, I'd be hoping to be taken out at that valuation rather than be hungry buying something else. But, you know, heck, they might want to use their scrip while it's pretty fully valued as well. And then Newmont, obviously, they're more likely to sell some assets post-merger with Newcrest rather than buy. And if they are hungry for anything, my bet is De Grey. For those guys, I just think the scale of De Grey, it's a Newmont asset in my mind.
What do you think with the Newmont Newcrest merger, Australian operations? What do you think is going to be spat out the back end?
Telfer
would be one.
Telfer.
That obviously you would assume they'd keep Boddington.
Yeah.
You would assume they would keep Cadia.
Yeah.
That's pretty much.
I just think Telfer.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'd bet. Mm. And then look at the Aussie big producers, just the two of them to talk about, being Northern Star, obviously hyper-focused on the super pit now.
They're not hungry at all, you wouldn't think. They're hungry with that mill expansion. They are consumed for a very long time.
I think so. And I think they're more likely a divestor of non-core assets. So, Tarasu Dam.
Talking about the Liontown contract, talking about how big a 4 million tonne operation is, that super pit is going to have two 4 million tonne operations. Mount Charlotte's going to be 4 million and the Fimiston Underground is going to be 4 million. So that is going to be massive.
And they'll be competing for the same labour because, you know, it's not too far away from each other.
Because you've got Mungari expansion with Evolution, then you've got the Linus plant being built.
That's finished now. Yeah.
Yeah, but like all the where they're going to get the people and the accommodation. Everybody, it is Kalgoorlie is going to be humming.
Yeah.
Bring back the Golden Mile.
And Evolution to round it off, they say they're still mulling a bid for Musgrave. But yeah, I just think they'll be more interested in anything that pops out of Newmont.
Musgrave, like, it's just weird after talking to Wayne Bremel about would Evolution be interested in Westgold. He says, oh, we're a bit too small for them. So how does Musgrave then weave into Evolution's sights?
Well, it's because they've got that joint venture with them, and you just read the public commentary and they say they're still mulling it. But I don't think they'll go there. But if they do, they'd look at, you know, their own standalone production facility there, because part of the exploration ground of Musgrave is a joint venture with Evolution.
Chuck another mill up there. More mills in the Murchison.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting, right? And I think, like, that's the landscape as paved, you know, really well by Ali. But the thing that we do as bankers, mate, is we throw some darts at the dartboard and have a punt at some potential deals.
And
this is what I've been waiting for. Predictions, because there is a chance they'll come true, and you're going to look like a genius.
Yeah, and it's easy when you're in the bloody the office to throw the darts, because especially you know, in the world that Ali and I come from, because we know nothing about mining, mate. We just know, we add this one to this one and it looks bigger, so I can do the deal.
One plus one is three.
Yeah. I like throwing the darts when you know where the dartboard is already. They're the best darts to throw.
The magnetic dartboard's
all upside.
Yeah. So, Ali, question for you, right? Like, caveat this, knowing that 95% of the darts are going to miss, but how do you think this consolidation theme that we've spoken to, these hungry players that we've spoken about, how is it going to unfold in the WA gold space?
I've got a few ideas, some of them a bit left field, but I think in this market there is some serious value plays that would be too good not to consider. And now, Trev, you know the most creative part that we used to get as investment bankers is making up project names. So I've gone ahead and made a couple project names.
Ali was the best at this.
Right. I love it. Yeah.
So this is Project Murchison Ménage à Trois.
You're going to have to explain Ménage à Trois for the unsophisticated people,
French?
Including myself.
It's, I think, French for a threesome, essentially. So this one's for Westgold taking out Mika and Great Boulder at the same time.
Yeah.
So they might have lost out on Musgrave, but I think this deal could potentially represent just as much value, if not more, for them. So going back to those criteria that we spoke about before as far as scale, grade and proximity to existing operations, this for me sort of ticks all of those boxes.
You've got to add another criteria, and that's complexity to complete, Ali, because fuck, you want to get two people lined up at the exact same time and say, fucking let's have a threesome and now it's a three-way scheme of arrangement. That's bloody hard.
Well, we should have done this on a Saturday night. Yeah.
Just need a good financial advisor, that's all. But so like they have a combined resource of say 1.7 million ounces at just shy of 3 grams a tonne and a small reserve. So Sidewell, that's Great Boulder's asset there, it's less than 25 k's from Westgold's Bluebird mill. And then you got Meeker's Murchison project about 50 k's from Tuckabianna. And there's a whole bunch of resource, about half a million ounces that weren't included in Meeker's study, let alone the ongoing drilling that they're doing. And similarly for Great Boulder, they're anticipating another MRE update end of this year to incorporate recent drilling. So if you're sort of thumb-sucking it, you could be potentially looking at a 2 to 2.5 million ounce combined resource by the end of this year. And say we assume 40% of that's resource reserve conversion, you've got a million ounce reserve at around 3 grams a tonne, which in this market... it's not
it's
too
bloody
bad.
High grade in this market.
It's high grade in this market. And so Westgold's kind of controlling that whole gold corridor between Tuckabianna and Bluebird. But I do have a caveat with some of the ground at Meeker, Matty.
Oh, for Andy Well.
Yeah, it's a bit of tough work there.
Yeah, I think it is a bit tough work. Very, very laminated from what I've heard. So it's hard to control the dilution. And another one of those assets similar to Paulson's in terms of it got mined out by a mid cap, and like obviously Paulson's is a bloody extremely large cap now that from Northern Star, but yeah, it got mined out by Silver Lake. They deemed it not going any further. It's just one of those ones. It's like a bit higher risk opportunity to make it work. But the thing about them that you like about companies, the Davidson boys have got a lot of skin in their company, so very aligned with the objectives of Meeker as directors and shareholders. So
absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, something to be aware of there.
Don't let that knock you back, Ali, because, yeah, in our world, an ounce is an ounce. Like, all ounces are fucking the exact same. There's no difference. But Maddie tells me an ounce is different to an ounce. It's bullshit.
Devil's advocate on that, Ali. Do you think that's going to fit in with how Westgold have transformed themselves to who they are today? Because previously they had a lot of smaller operations. They've now put them on care and maintenance, and now they're focusing on less operations, bigger operations, margin over ounces. Do you think they're going to sort of consolidate smaller ones, like to if they're going to go to the effort of trying to mine Andy Well for the ounces, but sort of going against their new formula of less operations?
Yeah, I think the grade and the proximity argument helps with that. And it doesn't really incorporate what growth there is to come, particularly at something like a Great Boulder as well. Mm. So, and it just depends. I mean, if they can displace better ore, you've got to do that cost benefit analysis, right?
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Keep your eye. So you have claimed any M&A activity between Westgold, Meeker and Great Boulder is yours. Like, so you've, like, if that happens, we're going to give you full credit because you might not be there that day. You heard it here first on Money of Mine, Money Miners.
She's got more ideas too, mate. We can claim all of these.
Oh, nice. Right. Idea number one from Ali G. Right. Idea number two.
This is Ausgold and practically anyone. So I'm calling this one Project UWA.
I was thinking anyone. I'm like, where are they listed?
I love the project name, Ali. You got to tell me the meaning. Yeah. Project UWA.
I can't take a credit for this one, but a Project UWA because they've done plenty of studies. So
I have heard that before, yeah.
So it is a good one. But looking at that set of undeveloped assets, gold assets in WA. They're the largest undeveloped free milling open pit and reserve in WA. So they've got 1.228 million ounces at the minute. And there's an updated resource due this quarter and a DFS in Q4. And this is the Katanning Gold Project. I reckon with the amount of drilling that they've done during the course of this year, that resource could easily go over 3 million ounces and a reserve over 1.5 million ounces. So there's been about 20 kilometres of drilling so far this year. So you could be potentially looking at a 150 to 200,000 ounce producer. They're on freehold land. There's no native title. They've got access to renewables from the grid.
But the farmers have got to say yes, don't they?
But the farmers have got to say yes. So I understand all that stakeholder engagement is underway. So as far as the deal's concerned, this for me is definitely a value and a scale play in light of what assets are available at the minute.
Yeah.
Currently, 76 million market cap, which is pretty damn cheap. So even with a 50% premium whacked on, it would only cost, say, 115 mil to acquire. And for context, Musgrave was acquired by Ramelius for around 200 million with a quarter of the mining inventory, albeit they've got a high-grade asset.
And mill synergies too.
And mill synergies as well. So there's no immediate neighbours that would make sense as an acquirer. And look, Boddington is nearby, but I think Ausgold's probably a bit small for that.
Isn't it South Boddington?
South
Boddington. Everyone was talking about it was going to be the next Boddington, but it sort of hit them. It didn't hit the mark, did it?
That was their marketing before.
Back in the day.
Management stuff, but yeah. It was marketed as South Boddington. It's like completely different geological.
Yeah. So I think for me, it's kind of open to really any mid-cap producer looking for cheap access to a new production hub, but willing to take the risk to build a new mill in this current market. Mm. So I really could be Capricorn, could be Westgold, Ramelius, Silver Lake, Regis, you could list the names off. But I think given the nature of the ore body being sort of a large, low-grade open pit, that is just perfect for a bit of Mark Clark magic from Capricorn. So that's my call on that.
I like it. I like it, Ali.
Like the link back to Capricorn, Ali.
Yeah, I mean, if I was Mark Clark, I wouldn't be in a rush, right? Because, you got your hands full with Mount Gibson. You don't want the investor universe to bloody get too ahead of themselves and set you up for failure if they start baking in the development of this and get priced at 1x NAV, because you want to beat expectations rather than underperform. So I don't think, if I was Mark Clark, I wouldn't really be sitting there thinking anyone else is going to nab, take, like, just consume it. You could take your time on it.
You'd definitely take your time.
Any others, Ali?
I've got a few more rapid fire ones. So we touched on it earlier. Emerald potentially bulking out more in Australia. So might be a bit of back to the future. Having a look at the Regis and Emerald market caps is sort of 1.1 versus 1.3 billion respectively. So could we see a merger of equals?
That's a good one.
Lavered and Region consolidated.
Which would then fund McPhillamy's very easily.
So there's that one.
Oh, I like that's. I like that.
Well,
one, Ali.
I like it conceptually, but I just think, like, Duketon, I think is that's what they got in.
Yeah.
That's not what it used to be, and Morgan, who runs Emerald, would know that. Do you want? I think he's created value by building a new mine when you get the real low cost dynamics, and if you buy Duketon today, you're not getting that.
But would that tie into your comments about Anglo? Would then Emerald look to take Anglo's stake of Tropicana and then have the JV with Regis and then go with Regis? I'm just matching companies here.
It's like a puzzle board, mate.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's my one. If that one happens, that was me. And Alan.
You got two more, Al?
Yeah, so this one sort of surely has been on the cards for a while, and that's Alto and Horizon Gold in the Sandstone region. Look, Westgold sold their Alto stake of about 9.9 to Horizon Gold, so...
Which is Zeta, essentially.
Yep.
Yeah.
So just get it done. It's a scale play. They'll have about 3 million ounces in Sandstone. Now they just need a meal, but I think that just needs to get done.
Bulsey said he wants to start going fishing and playing golf, and he's sick of going around the country presenting with Tatum. He didn't say that. He probably enjoys it, actually. So,
and then my lucky last one is Gascoigne, most likely Ramelius or Westgold. So if that was acquired for, say, 300 mil, either of those guys would be getting 1.2 million ounces at, say, just over 2 grams.
At this stage?
At this stage, could be more.
Still at depth and potential other veins. I think there's a lot of potential there to lift that.
Yeah. I like that one as a menage a trois. Digging deep, by the way, Gascoigne.
And they get a pretty much near new plant. So, you know, for Westgold, could you switch off Tuckabianna and track the water Gascoigne and boost up the processing facility with some more capex to make that all work? Who knows? But I think, like you said, Maddie, they probably need to find another Never Never or make
just
it bigger.
Just some other lenses. I reckon talk about between Simon Lawson, Mark Zeppner and Wayne Bramwell, that is a menage de trois I'd like to get involved in. Happy to tag out with any of you boys. Three of my favourite people.
Yeah.
Great blokes.
Yeah. Like you can see how you can have so much optimization and mind scheduling and all that sort of stuff by consolidating that Murchison region. You look at those three companies and there's 4 mills in that Murchison region between those three companies and they're probably still short ore.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you, Trav, you had a couple.
Yeah, I did. I was going to throw my hat in the ring here and set myself up for some embarrassment later, Ali. But
you fucked up the Alto prediction.
Yeah, exactly. I'll try and win it back, mate. Double or nothing. Okay, so I reckon Ramelius by Carasu Dam on your theme, Ali, of you know, no one wants to bloody build a mill in this environment, and fair enough. Well, why don't Ramelius buy that? And that solves their development solution for the two companies they picked up, being Breaker and Apollo. Bought them on with Carasu Dam. Happy days. Next one is Newmont buying De Grey. I imagine the time to do that will be after De Grey come out with their study. I think in their last study, it was CapEx is $1 billion. I mean, you saw Northern Star have a number that was $1 billion 12 months ago and then come out with that being 1.5. I reckon, you know, if De Grey, if that happens to De Grey and the CapEx is $1.5 billion again, does the share price come off? And then does someone like a Newmont become opportunistic? And especially, you know, now that they've got, you know, enhanced Australia exposure by virtue of the merger with Newcrest too.
Where does that leave Gold Road, Trav? Do you think they'd take it off
Gold Road
De Grey and Gold Road?
Gold Road has to be has to accept any offer, right? They're bloody 20%. It's going to be really hard to do anything without them. You got to win them over on price. You just have to have a decent enough premium. And then, I mean, Gold Road will, yeah, if you have a knockout premium, I'm sure Gold Road will be on board, but then they'll have to figure out what they do in amongst it all.
The next DFS is out this quarter, actually, so it could see some activity pretty soon.
Yeah. Number three was Murchison consolidation. Not sure what the order is, but I'm just a big believer that all folds in. And the fourth one is Telfer's obviously going to get spat out in the Newmont Newcrest merger. And it could go to either, you know, Greatland is the logical one there. I think Greatland, you know, they'll have they obviously got Wyloo on the register and they'll have funding capability to pick it up, I'm sure, because of Wyloo and other shareholders that can make that sort of thing happen. But I actually think that Evolution will be really interested in that becoming a production hub for themselves. And my bold prediction is Evolution will pick up both Greatland and Telfer.
Interesting. Oh, can I throw some in?
Yeah, I thought that.
I can't believe he's tried to leave me out. I've just got more. I think I've repeated it, but I'll say it again. I still reckon. Does it have to be gold?
Yeah, well, we can't be. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Nah, disregard it.
It's a sector piece.
Yeah, I thought so. Disregard it. I went bloody off track there.
Well, have you got any gold predictions, you can probably chuck them in now too, Matty, as well.
Nah, I agree. I concur with everything.
Oh, beautiful.
Jeez, I was going to start talking lithium then. What am I talking about? I'm just talking deals, predictions. Love this stuff. Gets me bloody throbbing. Loves it. Righto, Ali. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, boys. It's been fabulous.
You've literally done more work for this episode than I have in the last 2 months. So really appreciate it.
No, thank you.
It's been a bloody pleasure to work with you again today. So yeah, Buddy, thanks for coming in. Anytime you want to, for the rest of your career break, pop in and make us look smarter. We'd love to have you.
Fantastic.
It's legend.
Pleasure to be a part of the top 20 business podcasts in the country?
We're 10.
Top 10. Sorry, I'm shortchanging you.
10 on Spotify.
It's come off a bit, but it's a volatile list.
We'll be back. Let's bring in the bloody sponsor. I'm going to do the bloody, ready? Bring them over. We've got to do the transition to match that. All of them. What a pack of legends. K-Drill, Terra Capital, JP Search, Anytime Exploration, and Top Drill. Thank you to all our podcast partners that are keeping the electricity bill paid at Trav's house. Bloody legends. None of your sponsorship money's going to Ali either. She's done it for free. Appreciate
Fantastic.
It.
Fantastic.
Oh,
good stuff, Money Miners, and good stuff, Ali and Trav.
Hootaroo, mate.
Lovely work. Can we get on the limoncello again?
Absolutely. Hootaroo, boys.
Hootaroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.